Welcome to Victory Over Communism with Bill Gertz, the only program willing to pull back the curtain of communism to reveal how China and even America's own brand of Marxism pose real threats to freedom and democracy in America and the world today. Your host and guide to victory over communism is one of the nation's most experienced national security journalists, Bill Gertz, who uses unique facts, pinpoint analysis, and exclusive interviews to identify and counter today's destructive communist ideologies. Now, Victory Over Communism with your host, Bill Gertz.
Welcome to the podcast. The VOC podcast is about ideology, Chinese communism, and American Marxism and neo-Marxism. It's not about people who are free to believe in whatever they choose. The podcast is now in its second year and is filling a void in educating people. Our schools and universities should be teaching the facts and history of these ideologies, but they're not. Too often, these institutions have been politicized into accepting and even promoting Marxism and its offshoots without honestly assessing its tenets and practices that, as I've pointed out, are based on false assumption. What I'm trying to do with the podcast is clearly explain the failures of communism and why they are wrong. Additionally, I'm providing a counterproposal, one that is based on Judeo-Christian concepts of traditional God-centered morality and a new view of history as a providence of restoring humankind to an original ideal of creation. This latest episode will focus on Marxism in the United States and its role in seeking to overturn the American system of democracy and liberty in favor of anti-capitalist and ultimately an atheist system. For inspiration, this program, I'm drawing on the work of Chris Rufo, an outspoken conservative who has done excellent work in tracing the roots of American Marxism and Marxist current role in the insanity of woke politics and sexual extremism that is dominating society and driving the United States to ruin. Chris is with the Manhattan Institute and Hillsdale College, both tremendous institutions that are taking on woke madness and trying to counter the destructive impulses of the American left. The new book that Chris has, published July 18th, is called America's Cultural Revolution: How the Radical Left Conquered Everything. This is an important book for exposing the roots of Marxism in America. Rufo's argument is clear and unequivocal. The Marxist liberation movements of the 70s have produced the anti-American ideological battles today, including critical race theory and radical gender identity. As I've mentioned in earlier podcasts, the period of the late 1960s and early 70s produced a surge of radical Marxist liberation movements that were the work of radical counterculture philosophers and academics, many of them diehard Marxists. By that, I mean these were people driven by Marxist ideology to bring about what would ultimately be a communist revolution in the United States. The U.S. Marxists, like their European and Asian counterparts, understood that the United States was the center of world capitalism, capitalism being the ultimate political evil to be destroyed and replaced with a workers' system, of course, run by Marxists. American radicals were not passive. They engaged in campaigns of violence and terror, including bombings and murders, that they justified as required to produce a Marxist revolution. By the 80s, these radicals and groups had been largely neutralized, and their leaders were driven into exile in Cuba or jailed for their crimes or killed in battles with police. But the ideas of these radicals never died, and their cause, the overthrow of the American system, moved on to different ways of promoting Marxist revolution. According to Rufo, the radicals' long-term target shifted from street protests to direct action against established institutions to ideological subversion within the U.S. academic system. Rufo details Mao Zedong's predicament during the Civil War in China during the 30s, when he was besieged by nationalist forces. Mao then launched the Long March of the Red Army in 1934 and set off on a historic 5,000-mile strategic retreat that cost thousands of the lives of his troops. But ultimately, Mao launched a counteroffensive that resulted in the 1949 seizure of power in Beijing and the beginning of what would become the longest and deadliest communist revolution. The death toll from Chinese communism ranges from 60 million people to as many as 100 million. Through extermination, forced labor, communist-produced famine, and decades of repression of all political dissent. Several decades after Mao's long march, German-American political theorist Herbert Marcuse declared the American left to be in a similar position. As law enforcement authorities dismantled the main revolutionary terrorist groups, the radical new left was disintegrating. Marcuse turned to a young Marxist for ideological inspiration. Several young Marxists. Among them was a German student named Rudi Dutschke. Dutschke, who helped organize campus revolts throughout Europe. Recognizing that terror tactics were no match for overthrowing the established political order, it was Dutschke who first advanced the new strategy for producing social upheaval with Marxist characteristics. He called it the long march through the established institutions, a buzz phrase stolen directly from Mao's military campaign of the 1930s. The path to revolution for radicals was to lay down their arms and adopt one of the most effective tools of communism, deception. The objective was for the Marxists to covertly infiltrate universities, schools, media, and social services. Once inside, the Marxist agenda called for capturing the means of knowledge production in order to remake them according to Marxist ideology. Marcuse labeled the strategy working against the established institutions while working in them. The strategy was reflected in the seminal 1974 manifesto of the Marxist terror group, the Weather Underground. The Prairie Fire statement signaled a major shift in tactics from armed resistance to covert passive subversion. Radicals were urged by Marcuse to develop counter-institutions that would provide a foundation for Marxist social change. The New Left radicals understood that their path to power over the long term resided in the university. That was the beginning point for what Marcuse said was breaking the information monopoly of the establishment. Through radicalized universities and other institutions, Marxists could advance an American cultural revolution that would produce a transformation of values which strikes at the entirety of the established culture. Race politics, women's liberation, radical environmentalists, all were to be harnessed for the destruction of the cultural status quo as the first step to imposing communism. Marcuse's method called for radicals to work slowly, patiently, and methodically. The decades that followed saw a destructive takeover of many universities by Marxists or neo-Marxists, those that adapted the ideology of communism to various pursuits, whether it be sexual liberation, environmental radicalism, or more recently the black supremacist racism that regards white people as the source of all the nation's problems. The radical successful spread of this ideology by means of contagion, like a deadly virus throughout society. That was the goal. Its impact was the undermining of traditional culture and the shattering of existing hierarchy of values. The radicals moved swiftly into the establishment after the university, dropping countercultural looks in favor of the trappings of the establishment. This disarmed the establishment that welcomed them with open arms. As Ruffo puts it, their united front was defeated, but the Marxist dialectic of continuous revolution through conflict advanced. Former Weather Underground members Bernadine Dorn, Bill Ayers, and Jeff Jones published the new manifesto again by a group called the Prairie Fire Organizing Committee. The term Prairie Fire was from Mao's writings. It was Mao who said, "A single spark can start a prairie fire." It was grassroots Marxist organizing. Dropped until recently, the rhetoric softened, avoiding the idea of kill the pigs and blow up buildings. In its place were the Marxian offshoots of anti-capitalist ideology that adopted new ideological evils that today are the rallying cry for Marxists and communists in the United States. The ideas that there's racism, sexism, imperialism, colonialism, and, as evidenced by the Marx anarchist group Antifa, fascism. All these isms today are nothing more than Marxist shibboleths, defined as a belief used to distinguish a particular class or group of people, especially a long-standing one regarded as outmoded or no longer important. American society today is the most open, democratic, free, just, and fair society that's ever been produced in history. The Marxists understand that and are able to work within the system with the goal of ultimately weakening it and destroying it. It's not about obtaining rights, freedoms, or liberation for people of color or those with different sexual preferences. It is about power and how to get it and how to hold it. Once in power, Marxist radicals will use all means necessary to transform the United States, just as every communist state has done in the past, through ruthless suppression of freedom, extermination of classes or groups deemed undesirable or politically incorrect. The Prairie Fire revolutionaries called for taking control of schools through radical teachers forming an anti-racist white movement. Radicals could move into working class and minority schools to radicalize other teachers, organize parents, and teach and encourage students. Prairie Fire was ultimately a failure, but it sowed the seeds of a deeper precedent. Rather than advance revolution to the politics of action, the new path was through manipulating symbols and ideas. The language of Prairie Fire became the vocabulary of American intellectual life. You can see this in the subversion of language and the use of terms like institutionalized racism, white supremacy, white privilege, male supremacy, anti-racism, and corporate greed. Rituals of the left-wing institutions were also established that continue today. And this involves emotional manipulation, confessions of privilege, and elaborate displays of guilt. Former student radical and now Brown University professor Paul Buell wrote in his 2013 book, Marxism in the United States, to the question, where did all the 60s radicals go, the most accurate answer would be to the classroom. The long march through America was nearly invisible. Over the years, Marcuse's students and followers gained professorships at dozens of prestigious universities like Harvard, Yale, Georgetown, Duke, and the University of California, Berkeley. Most of the American people lost interest in the dangers of communism and Marxist ideology after the 1991 fall of the Soviet Union. New left radicals, however, successfully marched on through the institutions. They secured positions of influence, legitimizing their ideas in sympathetic journals, purging conservatives viewed as reactionaries from faculties, and systematically recruiting cohorts of students who were able to transform revolutionary ideology into a dense academic mass. Dominance came in the academy and has since spread to the media and entertainment, then the corporate world, and now, within the bulwark of conservative sentiment, the U.S. military. Ruffo was the first to reveal how Disney forced employees to engage in a critical race theory training, a program that includes denouncing America as fundamentally racist. It forced white employees to complete a white privilege checklist, and it included exercises on decolonizing bookshelves. We can see this in the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, who went so far as to tell Congress that he needed to understand white rage, and Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin, who forced all patriotic American service personnel to undergo a humiliating stand down in a hunt for white supremacists. What they found was that there were almost none. It was minuscule. But the damage has been done. The military today has driven out patriotic young people and is way short in its recruiting goals. People are voting with their feet and staying away from a left-leaning politicization within the ranks. Ruffo believes Marxists and other radicals have captured the institutions at the structural level and can't be reformed from within. The solution is not a long countermarch through the institutions. You can't replace bad directors of diversity, equity, inclusion with good ones, he said. The ideology is baked in. That's why I call for a siege strategy, Ruffo said. What is needed is aggressive measures against sexualizing young children by producing hard-hitting exposés of what the left is advocating in the name of progressive ideology. Punches must not be pulled in this ideological battle. We'll never win if we play by the rules set by the elites who are undermining the country, Ruffo said. We can be polite and lose every battle, or we can be impolite and actually deliver results for the great majority of Americans who are fighting for their small businesses, fighting for their jobs, and fighting for their families. Popular support needs to be mobilized. This was a theme in my last podcast when I called for greater organizational efforts to create united efforts to combat the Marxist agenda now visible in sexual extremism, false notions of systematic racism, radical climate alarmism that calls for destructive actions that will do little to mitigate climate change but would have devastating effects if implemented. Ultimately, success in countering the Marxist-inspired cultural revolution now underway is through educating people to the fallacies of the ideology. The key also will be providing a counterproposal in the form of ideas and values, God-centered ideals and values that must provide the ultimate moral foundation for a good and true society. I'll be right back after a short break.
You're listening to Victory Over Communism with your host, Bill Gertz, featuring exclusive interviews with today's top newsmakers and trendsetters. Stand by for more after these important messages.
Hi, this is Bill Gertz. I wanted to talk to you briefly about my latest book. It's called Deceiving the Sky, Inside Communist China's Drive for Global Supremacy. This is the most important book you can read to fully understand the threat posed by the Chinese Communist government. I urge you to get a copy today. It can be found at my website, The Gertz File, that's gertzfile.com, or at the book site called deceivingthesky.com.
If you enjoy listening to Victory Over Communism with your host, Bill Gertz, please consider helping Bill with his important work of educating patriots just like you about how communism is very real and even more dangerous than ever before. Your donation to the Victory Over Communism program will help expand its reach across America and throughout the world. In fact, you'll be helping to provide the kind of information that may well make its way behind the new Iron Curtain and the Great Firewall of China and inspire those living under communism to seek freedom. Supporting the Victory Over Communism program is easy. Just visit the program website, victoryovercommunism.net, and click on the link at the bottom to GoFundMe.com. Again, just visit victoryovercommunism.net and click on the link to GoFundMe.com. Thanks for listening, and God bless America.
You're listening to Victory Over Communism, featuring exclusive interviews with today's top newsmakers and trendsetters. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back. This is the counterproposal section of the podcast. In this episode, I'm going to provide a counterproposal to the communist view of materialism. Marxists regard matter as the primary substance of the universe and regard spirit as secondary or derivative. This view is similar to the earlier materialistic theories, but as far as the concept of matter is concerned, there's a great difference. According to the communist view, the physical concept of matter can be of no use to its ideology. This view cannot explain social phenomena and therefore cannot be true philosophy. In order for materialism to be a true philosophy, its theory should be applicable to all social phenomena as well as natural phenomena. Therefore, the concept of matter was expanded in an attempt to make it more universal. The communist concept of matter is the philosophical concept of matter. Matter is defined as the objective reality that exists apart from man's consciousness. As Lenin put it, Vladimir Lenin in Materialism in Imperial Criticism, Matter is a philosophical category designating the objective reality, which is given to man by his sensations, and which is copied and reflected by our sensations while existing independently from them. Thus, matter is anything which exists objectively apart from human consciousness. Second, another characteristic of communist materialism is that matter has motion. Mechanistic and older types of materialism separated matter from movement. They regarded matter not as a moving body, but as a static, objective being. According to communist materialism, however, matter has motion within itself as its mode of existence. Motion is an inherent attribute of matter and its mode of existence. There is no matter separate from motion, nor motion separate from matter. Matter and motion are inseparable, according to the communist view. Motion means not only movement in space from one place to another, but also physical, chemical, biological, and other movements. For example, the sprouting of a seed by the learning by student also are regarded as motion. Quote, as Engels put it in The Dialectics of Nature, motion is the most general sense conceived as the mode of existence, the inherent attribute of matter, comprehends all changes and possesses occurring in the universe, from mere change of place right to thinking. From the above, communists conclude as follows. Everything is derived from matter and is wholly of the nature of matter. That's from Lenin's Materialism and Imperial Criticism. Or as Mao Zedong put it, there is nothing in the world apart from matter in motion. So why should we care? We need to know these views of communist ideology to understand why they are wrong and to help educate people about the fallacies of the ideology. So let's look at the communist view of the relationship between matter and spirit. For Marxist-Leninists, spirit is nothing but a person's speculative ability or consciousness. It is produced out of brain cells that are the most developed organized material. When brain cells are damaged, mental activities become abnormal. Spirit or consciousness appears to Marxism as a function of brain cells. It cannot manifest itself apart from the physical body. When the physical body dies, the spirit or consciousness disappeared. Thus, they say there is no life after physical death, and therefore there is no spirit world. Ideas do exist, but only as reflections in the material mind of man of the external material world, according to Marx in Capital. As spirit is derived from matter, man's consciousness or ways of thinking is determined by being, the environment. It's not the consciousness of men that determines their being, but, on the contrary, it is their social being that determines their consciousness, Marx wrote in the preface to The Critique of Political Economy. Does it require deep intuition to comprehend that man's ideas, views, and conceptions, in one word, man's consciousness, changes with every change in the conditions of his material existence, in his social relations and other social life, Marx said in the Communist Manifesto. The VOC worldview offers a true understanding of this issue. First, what is the ultimate cause of the universe, matter or spirit? According to communists, matter is the objective substance that exists apart from man's consciousness, and matter has motion as its attribute. These two points are accurate, but materialists incorrectly conclude from these points that the ultimate cause of the universe is matter. By asserting that there is nothing in the universe but matter in motion, Marxist-Leninists deny God's existence. But the opposite possibility that God exists cannot be denied. Communists are unable to explain the reason why matter exists, where matter originated, the important question of ontology, and why matter has motion within itself as its attribute. Whether matter is created or not is a philosophical question of importance. The answer to these questions requires us to study the ultimate source of matter. The law of cause and effect is a universal law that no one can deny. Everything in existence must have a cause. Matter is an existence of effect or result. It must have a cause, and its cause must have a cause, and there must eventually be the ultimate cause or the first cause. Communists declare that the first cause of the universe is material. Modern science says everything is made of molecules, and molecules are made of atoms. Atoms are made of elementary particles. Then what are the elementary particles made of? According to quantum physics, elementary particles have some properties of being energy in the form of a wave, as well as particles. The theory of quantum mechanics seeks to observe matter in its smallest forms and finds that everything is broken down not into mass, but into energy, where matter can be thought of as a slowed down version of energy. Thus, the newer theory was developed. It says matter can be transformed into energy that has neither form nor mass, that sometimes transfers into a particle that has both form and mass. This brings up the question of why energy changes into a particle, and what factor causes the change. What does energy come from? Energy is also an existence of effect, and therefore must have a cause. What is the first cause of energy? Something must exist beyond energy, behind energy. The universe is very ordered and harmonized. Considering the fact that everything in the universe is orderly and harmonious, it is more logical and reasonable to think that the ultimate cause of the universe has some spiritual elements such as direction, purpose, will, and idea, than to think that the universe came about out of some chaotic energy by chance. Well, the reality is the first cause is what has been called God by religions. You can use other names, but this being must exist in order for the universe to exist. There should be no denying the existence of this being as the first cause of the universe. Modern science does not deny the existence of God, nor does it prove the absence of God. Thus, the VOC counterproposal declares that the ultimate cause of the universe is the unique being that contains as its attributes, the cause of both spiritual and material elements. This unique being is called God. Also, the ultimate cause is neither just spiritual nor just material. The cause is both elements. The cause of both elements existed within the first cause from the very beginning. The traditional views of idealism and materialism are both wrong. As the universe came about of this unique being, which contains the cause of both spiritual and material elements, everything has both of these aspects, spiritual and physical. And fundamentally, the universe itself is composed of two aspects, a spiritual world and a physical world. The universe did not come about by accident, but was created by God in accordance with his purpose and his principles of creation. This first cause is a being that transcends both time and space. There can be no further cause than this first cause. Therefore, there's no need to answer the question, who created God? God existed from the eternal past, exists in the present, and will exist to the eternal future. So, there is the communist view of a fundamentally chaotic, material, energy-filled universe that produced a physical world by chance. By contrast, the VOC worldview is that the first cause contains idea, will, and purposes, and is a source of energy. Through God's principles of creation, both the spiritual and physical worlds were created. This is the truth of the universe and its origins. So, what is the true relationship between matter and spirit? The Marxist explanation for man's spirit is very ambiguous and contradictory. It claims spirit is a product of brain cells, or it's something just transformed through the brain cells. But the fact that mental activities become abnormal when the brain cells are damaged does not necessarily lead to the conclusion that spirit or consciousness is produced by the brain cells. The possibility remains that an invisible spirit existing objectively manifests itself through the brain cells. For example, when a TV set is broken, image and sound become abnormal. But image and sound are not produced by the TV set. They come from a source independent of the TV set via invisible electromagnetic waves. A new computer chip that is the world's fastest is trying to replicate the human brain. I once edited a book called Mind and Brain, The Many-Faceted Problems, based on essays from leading brain scientists. Their conclusion was that no computer will be able to copy the speed and power of the human brain. On the question of whether spirit is a product or a function of brain cells. Product and function are not the same. If spirit is a product, then spirit is not a function. A product can exist separately from its parent body. A function of a thing cannot exist separately from the thing itself. For example, an egg is a product of a chicken. It can exist separately. The ability to lay eggs is a function. It cannot exist apart. If spirit is a product of the brain, then spirit can exist apart from the brain. And if spirit is a function of the brain, the spirit cannot exist apart from the brain. If spirit appears merely as a function or an ability of brain cells, it totally belongs to the brain cells and therefore cannot have any influence or reaction upon the physical body. But in actual human life, there are many cases when the human mind or spirit influences the body. For example, you can have a healthy spirit that will lead to a healthy body. You can have a bad spiritual condition that can lead to an unhealthy spiritual condition. These phenomena indicate that the spirit is not merely a function of the body, but rather spirit has an influence on the body. If it is recognized that spirit can influence the physical body, the conclusion is that spirit does not totally belong to the physical body. Thus, the spirit can exist separately from your body, and spirit can exist beyond physical death. Thus, the spirit world exists. Marxist-Leninist ideology can explain these points logically and reasonably. Additionally, if human life lasts only during the physical life and comes to an end at the time of physical death, that contradicts the essential desire within humans to live in eternal happiness. Also, the fundamental questions about life, such as inborn handicaps, selfishness, inequality, death, etc., can never be solved if human life lasts only in the physical world. Throughout history, many saints and sages taught with confidence that the human life is eternal. There are many examples that prove the possibility that the spirit world exists. Also, no one has proved the absence of a spirit world. Regarding consciousness, it's partly true that human consciousness is influenced by environment, but human consciousness and ways of thinking are not always determined by the environment. There are numerous cases in which human consciousness, will, or determination has influence and can alter the environment. In summing up, humans have both spirit and body. The spirit and body are closely linked with each other, centering on the brain cells. A person's spirit or mind manifests itself through give and take action with the brain cells. Regarding the relationship between the spirit and the physical body, in order for the spirit to grow, it needs nourishment. Spiritual food is derived from the environment in which a person lives. The spirit gives spiritual impulses to the body, thus stimulating the body to act. Those actions, in turn, will return vitality elements to the spirit. This produces growth in the spirit in response to the vitality elements the spirit receives. Each person, through will and practice, determines the type of spiritual nourishment he or she absorbs from his or her environment, and what kind of actions, for example, selflessness or selfish actions, that person makes. Thus, the communist theory of consciousness is determined by being is partly true, but not always true. The spiritual state of growth or human consciousness is not necessarily determined by the environment. It is true that the human spirit can be improved by changing a person's surroundings, but it is not sufficient just to improve external social conditions. What is more essential is to bring about a maturity improvement or improvement of one's eternal spirit. I'll be right back after a short break.
You're listening to Victory Over Communism with your host, Bill Gertz, featuring exclusive interviews with today's top newsmakers and trendsetters.
Welcome back. For the news portion of the podcast, I'm going to discuss a recent campaign speech by former President Donald Trump. On June 24th in Washington at the Faith and Freedom Coalition Conference, Trump outlined plans for restoring a number of policies put in place during his administration, including sending American troops to the border to counter the invasion of illegal immigrants. Trump also promised next time in office to go after the deep state, his idea of unelected bureaucrats that he says have weaponized the justice system. Like many post-communist states in Europe, Trump also promised to set up a Truth and Reconciliation Commission that will declassify and publish all documents on the so-called deep state spying, censorship, and corruption, with an emphasis on targeting their targeting of Christians by U.S. authorities. Never again will federal law enforcement be used to target religious believers, Trump declared. Americans of faith are not a threat to our country. Americans of faith are the soul of our country. Another Trump plan calls for directing the Justice Department to conduct investigations into what he called radical Marxist-fascist prosecutors who release rapists and murderers while persecuting conservatives and religious believers. But the most significant announcement at the June 27th speech was Trump's disclosure of a new plan to protect the integrity of the U.S. immigration system. Current federal law, he noted, prohibits entry into the United States by communists and totalitarians. The question for Trump was what to do with the ones that are already in the country. Currently, there are thousands of members of the Chinese Communist Party that have not only been granted entry into the United States, but have become permanent residents, enjoying the benefits of the United States while still retaining membership in the despised Chinese Communist Party. Many of them are also involved in buying real estate and other purchases in the United States as a way to get their money out of China in case things go south over there, which is likely in the future. The Chinese Communist Party announced recently that its current membership is more than 98 million people, larger than the population of most small nations. Trump said a new law must be passed by Congress regarding communists currently in the United States. He didn't go into detail on what the legal solution to those communists is, whether they should be deported or whether their residencies should be withdrawn. Again, this is covering foreign nationals. It does not cover American citizens. But for those that seek entry, as President Trump again announced, he would order the implementation of something called Section 212F of the Immigration and Nationality Act. Using that legal tool, the United States would be able to order the government to deny entry to all communists and Marxists. Those who come to join our country must love our country, Trump said. We wouldn't want them when they want to destroy our country. Further, Trump announced that he will keep foreign Christian-hating communists and Marxists out of America. The comments drew angry retorts from liberals and leftists and several communist publications. The Communist Party USA-affiliated People's World attacked Trump's idea as an undemocratic leftover from the first Red Scare dating back to 1918. Associated Press, a once great news agency that has since been transformed into a voice of liberal political views with a strong anti-conservative bent, compared Trump's plan to a similar plan to ban travel from several Muslim nations from entering the United States. This was in a bid to curb the entry by Islamic terrorists. The ban was lifted under President Biden. The lengthy piece in the Associated Press examining a legal ban on communists sought to play down the danger that communists and other Marxist-Leninists are a problem, saying few Americans support the ideas. That has been false, as recent public opinion surveys have showed that young people, persuaded by decades of Marxist infiltration of schools and universities, are growing increasingly interested in socialism, the ideological handmaiden of Marxism-Leninism. Current law bars people who are members of any Communist Party from becoming naturalized citizens or green card holders. The law states that any immigrant who, quote, who is or has been a member of or affiliated with the Communist Party or any other totalitarian party or subdivision or affiliate thereof, domestic or foreign, is inadmissible to the United States. The law goes back to 1918, a year after Lenin took power in Russia and launched the horrors of Soviet communism. And later, similar Marxist ideologies wreaked havoc in China, Cuba, Vietnam, Cambodia, and elsewhere, killing millions as part of an ideological drive to remake humankind into an ideal workers' paradise. Section 212F gives broad power to bar people, not U.S. citizens, from entering the United States if doing so is determined to be detrimental to the interests of the United States. Trump used a similar tactic for the travel ban that critics say discriminated against Muslims. But the Supreme Court ruled 5-4 in favor of Trump. Chief Justice John Roberts stated in the majority opinion for the ruling that the justices weren't addressing whether the travel ban was good policy, but he said the power to do so was well within the president's considerable authority over immigration and the responsibility for keeping the nation safe. Thus, legal experts say the Supreme Court case is a sign that Trump would be on solid legal ground from barring communists and Marxists from coming into the United States. American Marxists are known to be expert at using something called lawfare or legal warfare to advance their revolutionary agenda, and the communists would no doubt look to the sympathetic leftist jurists to block the ban, more in hopes of promoting the Marxist ideological agenda that is advancing steadily in the country rather than helping foreign communists come into the United States. Trump's plan to ban entry by communists would be mainly targeted at the People's Republic of China, where the tens of millions of party members would be prevented from entering the United States. Chinese party members, with the exception of defectors from China who are not opponents of the regime, include former government and military officials, as well as a growing number of Chinese business people. The impact would be to ban China's elite from entry and would signal to Beijing that the United States is no longer interested in supporting CCP rule. Current members of the Chinese Communist Party, of the Communist Party USA, that is, are around 15,000 people who, as U.S. citizens, would not be affected by the entry ban. Same for the large percentage of the 93,000 members of the Democratic Socialists of America who identify as Marxists. That is, a large percentage of them do. AP said Trump was raising the specter of communism for purely political purposes in animating his supporters. But the danger of communism, once thought to be ended with the fall of the Soviet Union in 1991, remains real. China's orthodox Marxist-Leninist leader Xi Jinping has revived communism in China and is now spreading it around the world, albeit covertly through a number of Chinese government initiatives like the so-called Belt and Road Initiative and the Global Security Initiative. All people who support the program must buy into Chinese communist ideology as a precondition for getting support from China. The Trump ban on entry by communists and Marxists resonated most deeply with the millions of Americans who came to this country after having lived under totalitarian regimes. These people understand clearly that the danger of a communist-ruled United States is no longer theoretical, and that many of the woke policies of radical black racialists and sexual extremists promoting unscientific gender identity policies are not too distant ideological bedfellows from their former communist states. I'll be back after a brief interlude.
You're listening to Victory Over Communism with your host, Bill Gertz. Featuring exclusive interviews with today's top newsmakers and trendsetters. Stand by for more after these important messages.
I spoke to you earlier about my book, Deceiving the Sky. I also wanted to urge you to take a look at another book that I wrote called iWar, War and Peace in the Information Age. We live in an information age, and yet we're getting bombarded with enemy propaganda coming at us from all different directions. iWar really helps expose what we need to do and how we need to counter it. I urge you to get a copy. The book can be found at iwarbook.com or at my website, thegertzfile.com.
You're listening to Victory Over Communism with your host, Bill Gertz. Featuring exclusive interviews with today's top newsmakers and trendsetters. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back. I'm joined now on the program by Cheryl Chumley, online opinion editor and a colleague of mine at the Washington Times, who is known for writing hard-hitting stories. Cheryl is also the host of Bold and Blunt podcast, of the Bold and Blunt podcast on the Washington Times, and an outspoken Christian conservative. I asked her to join me to talk about her latest book, Lockdown, The Socialist Plan to Take Away Your Freedom, which, as the title says, highlights the loss of liberties during the pandemic. Cheryl, welcome to the program.
Bill, it's great to be with you. Thank you for having me.
Sure. Before I start, I want to tell you an anecdote about this subject. During the early days of the COVID outbreak, I was in touch with several former Army doctors, two of whom worked at Fort Detrick, which does our biological warfare defenses. And I remember telling them at the time, I said, the lockdown has all the trappings of if the communists were to take over the United States, using a health crisis as a justification. And so your book really kind of resonated with me. Tell us a little bit about the book, Lockdown, and what inspired you to write it.
Well, it furthers that point that you just outlined, because I early on also was suspicious of the lockdowns. And I thought, what a great time to be a pro-government official or a globalist, because this just gives the absolute best opportunity to strip all these individual liberties from Americans that globalists have been lusting to strip for decades now. And so I wrote the book because it was concerning to me that people in America were too complicit with government mandates, which weren't laws. They were just executive orders carried out by bureaucrats, and they folded based on fears of this virus. And basically, I wrote the book to say that if you think the government is going to move on from this pandemic and we will return in America to pre-pandemic freedoms, think again.
Yeah, I definitely sense that. What are some of the hangover effects of the lockdowns and the power grabs that you've been able to see? I think the most obvious one was the mask mandate, which was a horrible thing to me. I mean, I can remember, my wife and I during the pandemic, we made sure we went outside and walked every day. And some of my friends were actually afraid to leave their houses and without a mask or so on. But yeah, so what are some of the hangover attacks on our liberties that we're seeing as a result of the power grab during the pandemic?
Well, there's so many to list. I'll just name a couple. But just to further that point you just brought up about walking outside the house, isn't it interesting that for years and years and hundreds of years even, right, we're told to get outside, get some fresh air, because that helps boost your immune system. And then suddenly under this coronavirus, that was the last thing we wanted to do. Supposedly, we were supposed to stay in rooms, shut our windows, and just hunker down with family members, which to me and science for decades have said that's the worst thing. But as far as lingering effects, I know that you have seen, same as I have, same as many of your listeners, people driving around in cars by themselves wearing face masks. And you have to say, why? What is going through their heads? And so one of the lingering effects is fear. People have been conditioned to turn to government to ease their fears. They've been conditioned to turn to government and wait for permission to do something you shouldn't need permission to do, walk around without a face mask on your face. But one of the more concerning headlines that I've seen just this week, Bill, was that colleges, as conditions for students returning to campus this fall, have to have proof of these COVID shots. And we are at the point now, we know too many negative repercussions have come from these shots. It never should have been a mandate in the first place. But when you look at some of the health outcomes, the myocarditis, the blood clots, and even more, it definitely at this point should be choice. And so that's still out there floating, lingering as an outcome.
Yeah. Okay. Let's talk a little bit about socialism in the U.S. As you survey the U.S. political landscape, how are American Marxists and socialists working most aggressively to gain power?
One of the biggest things is the mindset shift. that has taken place in America. You can point to a host of programs and policies and pieces of legislation and all that, but those wouldn't exist without having a mindset shift of American citizens. And just look at what happened under the coronavirus. We turned from a nation of individual choice into a nation of do what the government tells you to do for the good of your neighbor. And so we turned the corner from thinking of God-given individualism and rights as they come from the Creator and government only there to serve and protect those rights into a nation of collectivism, which is the biggest danger, which ushers in all those other isms, socialism, communism, Marxism.
Yeah, earlier in the podcast, I talked about the new left and how they changed tactics back in the 60s and 70s and made the long march through the institutions of America. I think they kind of achieved their ultimate goals during the Obama administration, and now during the Biden administration, they're also making tremendous headway. Do you think the Democratic Party has been taken over by Marxists, or do the party leaders have been able to keep the likes of the Squad and other radicals in check?
Oh, the Democrat Party is no doubt Marxist. It's, you know, Tom Perez, DNC chief, said years and years ago that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, the card-carrying socialist, right, was the new face of the party. And that's what the party has become. I look back, as you just mentioned a minute ago, at Barack Obama as being really the days that ushered in this Marxist-type mentality among Democrats, which has just been sped up under the feckless puppet Joe Biden.
Yeah. So I'm looking for solutions. You know, education is the best tool. What do we do? How do we help people, and especially young people, get a better understanding of communist, Marxist, and socialist ideologies? I mean, obviously, the academic system is broken on that score. They're not teaching people. What do we do? How do we get the word out to people?
Well, there's a direct link between the secularization of America and the explosion of Marxist principles in America. If you want to attack Marxism and socialism and communism, yes, run good people for office. Yes, teach your children at home the founding father principles and read the Constitution with them. Yes, run for school board in your local elections. But those are all whack-a-mole battles. The longer success in America for individual freedoms will come when Americans as a mass turn back to church, turn back to Judeo-Christian principles, and put God back at the helm of our culture. Because as the culture goes, so goes the politics.
Amen to that. Definitely. I think that the key is that one of the things that the left has done is to remove all sense of morality. And I'm talking about God-centered morality. Right now, I mean, if you look at the way the culture is headed, they seem to be totally obscuring the idea of right and wrong and good and evil. I mean, it's a huge problem.
And it's strategic on the left, right? These things didn't happen just, you know, overnight. This has been a strategic design of the left, which, you know, look through history. Communist nations, one of the last walls to usher in their communism is to get rid of religion, get rid of the churches, or water it down to the point where religion means whatever the individual wants it to mean. That's where we're at in America right now. That's why you get phrases like love is love and Jesus tolerates LGBTQ agendas and so forth. It creates that chaotic system that the left can then swoop in and exploit and take over.
Yeah, it's clear to me that if you look at Marxism, Leninism, Marxism or neo-Marxism, at its core, it's atheism. This is the key element of there. I mean, and that's kind of the main focus of this podcast. Cheryl, how can people get access to your books and find you on social media and online?
Thank you. Well, of course, you can find me at WashingtonTimes.com, right? But I have a website, CherylChumley.com, that links to all my books, and you can read all the nice things the people who are nice enough to endorse my book said about them. And you can find me on Twitter at CK Chumley.
Great. We've been talking with Cheryl Chumley, the online opinion editor at The Washington Times. Thanks for tuning in. That's it for this episode. Please tune in again in a couple of weeks.
Thanks for listening to Victory Over Communism with award-winning national security journalist Bill Gertz, the only program in the free world unafraid to pull back the curtain of communism to reveal how the Communist Party of China and even America's own brand of Marxism pose real threats to freedom and democracy in America and the world today. See you next time on Victory Over Communism with your host, Bill Gertz.